the Chair by Mark Taverner, starring Michael Williams, Barry Foster and Hugh Laurie.
Can we start, please? Right. Let's quickly review yesterday's news and then move on to look at what's coming up today.
Oh, sorry.
George, the morning editorial meeting has been starting at 8:45 a.m. for as long as I've been in charge of it.
Yes.
Well, let's get on with it.
Hi, George.
Now, the only thing I have on yesterday's news bulletins was the sound quality of Max Parker's cricket report from Barbados. Did anyone else notice it?
I think Max has been having technical problems.
Well, they've moved on to Trinidad now, haven't they? So perhaps that'll solve it.
Caroline.
Hold on, John. Rachel, was there anything else in television?
Well, we have some nice footage of President Clinton's visit to Downing Street to discuss Iraq with the PM. Apparently, Clinton played his saxophone and the PM played his guitar.
Saddam Hussein surrendered.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, so what's coming up today?
Caroline, can I just say something?
Oh,
can I update everyone about the murder story? As you know, we've got a maniac on our hands who's been bumping off dentists, and yesterday he broadened his scope. An optician was found dead with an arrow through his eye.
We've reported that, George.
Yeah, but the point is this. The government abolishes NHS dental care and dentists start getting murdered. Yesterday, the government announced a drastic increase in the cost of eye tests, and lo and behold, an optician cops it. There is a clear connection between these murders and the policies of New Labour.
George, we've had this discussion. You haven't produced anything conclusive about this connection. Have you got anything new?
Yeah, damn right, I've got something new.
About the murders and New Labour?
About the murders and a senior government minister.
Marcy, I thought news management was your job.
I can't control the PM. He's a lord himself. And yesterday's announcements had quite a good press.
From the Tory papers, anyway.
You know, for the life of me, I don't understand this Prime Minister. One minute he's strumming his guitar, the next minute he's driving a coach and horses through the welfare state. Do you actually think he believes in anything?
I believe in angels. Something good in everything I see.
Prime Minister.
I believe in angels.
Call me Kenny.
The morning press review, Kenny.
Ah, yes. How have the new measures been going down?
On the whole, pretty well. The Times says the Prime Minister has shown himself to be a man of courage and determination. Telegraph says Kenny Ball has shown he knows the meaning of leadership. The Sun says, aye, aye, Captain Kenny. The Daily Sport says, man from Atlantis stole my false eyelashes. Oh, and the Mirror says you're a callous and uncaring swine.
Bit off message, isn't it?
It's a Labour paper.
Ah, I see.
Latest opinion polls show you're the most popular Prime Minister in history.
Isn't that remarkable?
Astonishing.
I mean, here I am, socking it to the British people, and they love me for it.
Absolutely inexplicable.
There is one other thing, actually. The BBC.
Marcia, you're getting obsessed by the BBC. I've told you about this before.
On this occasion, Kenny, I think Marcia has a point.
Last night, BBC News ran pictures of you and President Clinton playing your guitar and saxophone, and the reporter made a smarmy, sarcastic reference to fiddling whilst Rome was burning.
George, are you saying that in your considered opinion, Marcia Mallon is a homicidal maniac?
I only said possible suspect.
Caroline, I insist on addressing this meeting.
I haven't finished yet.
I insist.
John!
Some of you may know that BBC News has come into possession of compelling evidence that the chairman of the BBC is personally implicated in a grave financial scandal.
Compelling.
So, what's the evidence?
Well, I can't tell you. I've been forbidden by the chief executive to take this story any further.
What we have is one uncorroborated anonymous source. We do not broadcast stories on that basis, and you know it.
I have asked permission to put a senior reporter on this story. You said it was a waste of resources.
All right. You can have your senior reporter. George, you're the most senior reporter in the department. Look into this story, will you?
What? Caroline?
You wanted a senior reporter, now you've got one.
They're taking me up the murder story, just when it's getting interesting.
Only for the time being. Right. Well, if you'll excuse me, I've got a meeting with the chairman. Thanks, everybody. Caroline, how does it work?
So I get taken off the murder inquiry just when it might have caused a bit of embarrassment.
I'm not being rude, George. When I said a senior reporter...
You meant the financial journalist.
Of course. Philip so in and you'd know what he meant.
I think I can guess. Right. I'm nipping out for a minute.
Boom, 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 boom. Shoot you right down.
A Guinness and a lager, please.
No worries, mate.
George?
Mm-hmm.
I'm running out of Atmos. Every day for the last 2 weeks I've been finding a phone box, pretending to do a report.
I don't think it might be easier if you actually went to the West Indies, do you?
I mean, as long as the listeners think I'm there, what's the difference?
Oh, well, where do I come in?
Well, all I need you to do is pop into the Grams Library and pick up some new music for me. Something that'll make a change from Bob Marley and the Wailers.
All right, I'll see what I can do. I'll meet you back here at 4. Caroline, are you seriously telling me you're allowing the chairman to broadcast live on air?
He asked to see me this morning, said after watching the news bulletin go out, he's decided that live broadcasting looked like fun, he'd like to try some.
Well, has anyone seen the script?
Well, there isn't a script as such. His lordship's exact words were, point me at the microphone and everything will be tickety-boo.
Oh, God.
We're going to listen to it, then.
Here on BBC Radio 4, our afternoon play is Did I Turn the Gas Off?, a drama of mounting tension and unease, which explores the anxieties of middle age and the uncertainties of middle-class life somewhere in the Midlands. Did I Turn the Gas Off? Is it 2? Now, a change to our advertised programme. 2 weeks ago, the former leader of the Liberal Democrats, Lord Crichton Potter, became chairman of the BBC. He's chosen Radio 4 to make his first public statement to you, the licence payer.
Hello, my dear.
Oh, God.
You know, I was lunching at the Connaught with $1, and I was just in the process of choosing the wine when a remarkable thing happened.
Oh, dear.
A young, rather junior wine waiter came up to me, a bit of a pasty-faced proletarian, to be frank, and he said, do not on any account have the 62 Margaux with the fillet of beef. Rather, your lordship, than combine the 62 with the fillet of beef, you'd do just as well to piddle in a bag of quavers.
Oh, God, oh, God.
And, you know, I thought to myself, isn't democracy a wonderful thing? I mean, just because a chap is a pasty-faced peasant, does that mean he has no right to an opinion? Well, of course it doesn't. And that's why I'm talking to you. As long as I'm your chairman, I want you to feel that this is your BBC. That's why I've decided to announce today my It's Your Lunch initiative. I shall be moving around the country having lunch, and I want you to come and join me and tell me your likes, dislikes, and concerns about our programs. I thought we'd kick off at the Ritz next Tuesday, say around 12:30. I do hope you'll be able to come. Remember, I'm your chairman. It's your BBC. It's your lunch.
Lord Crichton Potter.
Not that old chestnut again.
This check has come off before, then.
Let's find ourselves a corner. Come on.
Mr. Jackson, pleasure to meet you.
About 2 or 3 years ago, before I became Chief Whip, I was running our by-elections unit.
And Crichton Potter was still party leader.
Right. There was a by-election. A Tory seat, but everybody knew they were going to lose it. The question was, would we win it, or would it go to Labour? It was a very close fight.
Now you come to mention it. I think I remember it. Weren't there allegations of dirty tricks?
Well, 3 days before the poll, we were neck and neck with Labour. And some tabloid hack rings me up and says, we've got evidence that your leader has been spending party money on a wingding at the Ritz. It's our front page lead in the morning.
So they got hold of this check.
Well, they faxed me over a copy. It was one of the most incompetent forgeries I've ever seen in my life.
And all this was dreamt up by some Labour dirty tricks department.
Spin doctors, they call them nowadays. Some of them with senior jobs in Downing Street. Oh, excuse me. Jim!
Morning, Alistair. Not talking to you, lad. Serious offence, talking to a BBC journalist. I'll get drummed out of the brownies.
How are you, Jim?
I've been busy.
Jim, have you heard this rumour about some education announcement this afternoon?
Pay your own tuition fees, pay for your schools, new Labour, pay every damn thing.
Oh, you can always join the Liberal Democrats, Jim.
There are limits to class treachery, comrade, even in this brave new world.
I did try telling John, you know. In all the years I've been a journalist, 9 times out of 10, anonymous source material has always proved to be malicious gossip.
How's John taking it?
John is taking leave.
What?
I'm considering his position.
My God, we are the hard-headed, no-nonsense manager, aren't we?
How's the murder story going?
Caroline, you took me off the murder story.
That was hours ago. Come on, we've got bulletins to fill.
All right. I'll get straight back on it, then.
Right, listen, you layabouts. The chairman's story is a dead duck.
Oh, yes. Who's in charge here?
I am, George. Why?
Well, I might have a scoop for you. Anybody heard anything about an announcement on education, student fees, that sort of thing?
Well, we heard there was something in the air. You know what Downing Street's like nowadays. Only three people know about these announcements before they're made. Most of the Cabinet don't know.
Well, it sounded to me like an education statement's on the way.
Right.
Just a hunch.
I'll look into it.
Anything else come in? Rupert Murdoch in shock bid for papacy. Cambridge Don found dead. What's that about?
That's nothing for you, George. There's some Cambridge Don has been found dead under a pile of historical tomes. Apparently the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle fell on his head.
He was a Don?
Yeah, and he was an advisor to the government on education matters.
He was what?
Well, he used to advise the Tories on education policy, and when they lost, he was so right-wing that Labour kept him on. George, his death was an accident.
Was it? Oh, right. I'm off to Cambridge. I'll be back around 4. Oh, look, could somebody do me a favour and nip down to the Graham Library?
No, 4.
Just get something musical and atmospheric, anything.
Martin, have you ever smelled bacon cooking in the early morning from the open door of a cheap East End cab?
Of course I haven't. I'm a senior manager.
The prospect is alluring, appealing, and sizzling. You buy a bacon sandwich, and the reality is cold, fat, greasy, and disgusting. Martin, have you ever thought of yourself as the bacon sandwich of British broadcasting?
Charles, have you ever considered your own progress through broadcasting management? The ambition rampant, the ability so sadly inadequate.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Ah, face it, Charles. You've met your match. Every grubby little manoeuvre, every wheeze designed to discredit Caroline Holland has come to nothing. She will be Director General. You will not.
Martin, you are as premature as a duffel coat in early September.
Every time you attempt to discredit the woman, she comes back stronger than ever. Financial scandal involving the chairman, she saw through that in 10 minutes.
A temporary setback. A trifle when set against this. What the devil's this? This will be the Wheezy de Tutti Wheezy. A fellowship in the gift of the Academy of Wheezes. This will destroy the career of Caroline Holland now and for all time.
From Caroline Holland to the chairman, the future of BBC Radio. Good God, Charles, you can't.
Last night, I was a guest speaker at the Cambridge Union. I spoke in favour of the motion, this House believes that he who has no moral scruples whatever wins. We won.
Apparently, this is the oldest college in Cambridge, Frank.
I still don't know what I'm doing here, George.
I told you, we've come to investigate a murder. And that's one of your impossible here.
So, this is the canteen, is it?
It's not the dining hall, Frank. It's a bit posh for a canteen.
Overprivileged git.
Oh, come on, you're just jealous. You'd love to have spent 3 years in a place like this.
Well, George, I take it you have brought me here for some reason.
Ah, and this is the high table where all the fellas sit. Come on, Frank, sit down. I brought you here for a reason, all right. Before you got here, I had a quick look at Niall's rooms. You know, the Don was found dead.
But it was a freak accident. Some books fell on his head.
The local force were very cooperative. They thought it was an accident, too. Except they'd found a note in his pocket.
The tree of knowledge whereof thou shalt not eat.
Now, you tell me, does that sound like our killer, or doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah, apparently last night the victim, Peter Niall, took part in a debate at the Cambridge Union. There was him and some MP on one side and Charles Prentice, a BBC executive, no less, and a government minister on the other. After the debate, they all went back to Niall's rooms for a drink.
Yeah, well, what of it?
Oh, not very much. The government minister was Marcia Mallon.
Prime Minister, you can't just do nothing. The man's supposed to be your deputy.
And there's no doubt the lead came from him.
How many people knew about this education announcement? You did, I did, the education secretary, the chancellor and Jim. But 2 hours before the announcement, the BBC runs a story saying student fees are to be increased in a major education statement this afternoon. It must have been Jim.
Doesn't seem to have done us any harm, though, does it?
Well, listen to this. Straight after the announcement, your beloved deputy held a meeting of his supporters in a committee room.
Oh, I wonder what he had to say.
You don't have to wonder. I had the room bugged.
What?
Now, listen to this.
You know, I'm inclined to join the Labour Party, our leader. Because you have a sick bad. You can hear the Prime Minister now. Our daddy says to me, here our future Prime Minister pushed his wheelchair to Sainsbury's.
Hey.
And there we were, right next to the fresh pasta counter. A wheel fell off Dad's wheelchair. And we got home and Mum says, distinctly remember to get to Marple sun dried. I looked up and I says, here I am. This is it with regard to this. And that one day I joined the Labour Party.
I'm terribly worried about Jim.
How much longer are you going to put up with this? Surely there is some point when you've got to assert your authority. Make people understand what staying on message is about.
And that point will come at a moment of my choosing and not Jim Hardy's. Ring up and harangue the BBC if you like. That always cheers you up.
Sorry, Kenny, I realise you must be busy.
Well, I am rather. Señor Rodrigo's coming.
Oh, the Spanish ambassador?
No, no, Marcia. My guitar tutor.
Did you mind?
Dear Caroline, I'm pleased to invite you to an interview for the position of Director General on a date to be arranged.
Thank you very much. Caroline. And aren't you actually proposing to broadcast?
Yeah, that the link between these murders and new Labour policies is proved and undeniable. I'll stop there for the time being.
Right, well, if nobody needs me, I'm having informal drinks with the chairman.
Is that yours?
Tchaikovsky's greatest hits. That's not very Caribbean.
Why does it have to be Caribbean, George?
Oh, no reason. No reason at all. Right, I'll see you later then.
Don't tell me my job, George. Niall was murdered in his room sometime last night. Marsha Mallon was one of three people who had drinks with him after this union debate. That proves nothing.
Any witnesses to what time these people left?
I spoke to the night porter. The first chap left Cambridge at 11:15 to get back to the House of Commons. The second one...
Prentice, the BBC bloke.
Yeah, left around midnight, said he was staying with friends in Cambridge, and the woman didn't leave till gone one.
Marsha Mallon.
And the body was found at 1:30, so... It looks like she was the last one to see him alive.
The last one to see a murder victim alive is the murderer.
Oh, all right, George, all right. Anyway, then I spoke to Niall's boss. Yesterday afternoon, Niall asked to see him privately, confessed that he's been having an affair with a senior government minister.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, said he now realised it was a terrible mistake and he proposed ending it. He was going to tell her last night.
Frank, you remember that newspaper piece? Said she was cripplingly shy and had never had a boyfriend. Suppose this was the first affair of her life. Suppose last night he jilted her. It gives her one hell of a motive.
Gangway, mind your back. There we are, George.
Oh, cheers, Frank.
And there's yours.
Yeah, lovely job.
Oh, God, that was quick.
Can't stop, old boy. 30 seconds to get to the West Indies.
I think we'll let that breathe a little before Miss Holland arrives.
Yes, Chairman. Here you are.
Oh, Gordon, Brennan, I suppose I better read this. The Future of BBC Radio by Caroline Holland. God, there's masses of it. Give me a shout as soon as she arrives.
Yes, Chairman. I think it's almost time for a cricket report, incidentally.
Excellent.
The Prime Minister has said he's determined to continue his reforms.
Radio 4 is the country's principal speech network.
Police have confirmed that they're treating the death of Dr. Peter Niall in Cambridge.
The prosperity of public service broadcasting itself, I do get on with it, for God's sake, depends on the vibrancy and...
England have had another good day in the Trinidad Test.
Wonderful.
Reflecting on England's progress, here's our special sports correspondent, Max Parker.
Pause with me, if you will, whether you are at home or at work. And savour an atmosphere that is joyously, quintessentially Caribbean. The sand, the sunshine, the children, the friendliness of the people, the hostility of the past slowly, the majesty of Lara, the history of this proud island, the jubilation. And everywhere, the reggae. At a time like this, in a place like this, does the score really matter?
Absolutely.
Max Parker.
Nominate Parker for Sony Award.
Caroline's office has just run this on the way, Chairman.
I don't think I can cope with much more of this. Listen, in order to delineate a bimodal, bimedia structure, it is essential to avoid bifurcation or obfuscation. Do BBC people really talk about that?
Yes.
Ah, summary of main recommendations. Thank God for that. One, I propose the abolition of test match special to make way for more new...
The abolition? Hell's bells!
Good evening, Gemma.
Cream and crumpets.
I beg your pardon?
The abolition of cricket on BBC Radio. More news, you inspissated hussy.
I'm sorry?
You brazen, philistine, uppity bimps.
Chairman!
Don't you chairman me, you audience research apparatus chick. You become director general over my dead body. Get out!
But what have I done?
Get out of my office! Get out of this building! Get out! Get out! Get out!
Chairman.
Oh, you know it, George?
Oh, likely. Going back to Cambridge.
Yeah, let me go, Caroline.
What the hell's up with her?
Perhaps a wine with a corpse. Listen, what I'm doing tonight is probably deep background, at least for the moment. I may have a piece for the midnight, and I may not.
Yeah, we're probably okay. If all else fails, we've always got Max Parker. Actually, I was going to ask you about that.
Sorry, I can't stop. Officer at Cambridge, Don.
Maria.
Yeah. Coffee. Now, your essay for next week. Throughout its history, the Labour Party has only ever won elections by pretending to be the Conservative Party. Discuss. And do try to stop writing like a retarded fourth former on a bad day.
Dr. Salisbury, George Cragg.
Ah, come in. Right, off you go.
Thank you, Dr. Salisbury.
Do sit down. What an extraordinary chap your policeman friend is.
The fearless Frank of the Yard. Ah, he's a good copper in his own way.
I asked him what his theory of this murder case was. He said his theory was... Now, what was it? To catch the scroat and screw him to a kickstand. Deliciously right-wing of him.
Sounds like Frank.
And what is your own theory, Mr. Cragg?
Look, Doctor, as Director of Studies in History, what exactly was your relationship with the murder victim?
I taught Peter when he was an undergraduate. He was a very brilliant student, and I was instrumental in getting him his fellowship. Of course, we saw less and less of him in Cambridge. He became rather a collector of government committees and advisory positions in Whitehall. He spent more time in London than he did here.
How did that go down with his colleagues?
You mean, did it arouse the envy of less illustrious fellows?
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, yes. Look here, what are you suggesting? That he was bumped off by an envious, frustrated old Don? I thought this murder was one of a series.
It always helps to have a bit of background on the victims. He started off as an advisor to the Tory government and was reappointed to advise the Labour government. That's quite unusual, isn't it?
It is an act of utter cynical opportunism.
And his affair with Marcia Mallon, was that an act of utter cynicism or love at first sight?
It would be fair to say that Peter viewed his involvement with a senior cabinet minister as not unhelpful to his career.
And you knew all about it.
This is a very discreet college, Mr. Cragg.
But the day he was murdered, he came to you, confessed to the affair, and said he wanted to end it. Did he say why?
Only that he had discovered something which had caused him to reconsider the wisdom of the liaison.
Oh, sorry to interrupt.
No, do come in. Mr. Cragg, you must excuse me.
Yes, of course. Well, I'll see myself out.
Now, Rebecca.
One with, I need one without, mate.
Oh, very appetizing, Frankie.
Well, you try finding something open in London at this hour. Don't you ever sleep?
No, not when I'm this close. It all fits, Frank. This was probably the first affair of her life.
Yeah, mate. Oh,
tough. And then she finds out the bloke's another bastard. He's only been using her to further his own career, and now he wants to end it.
Well, I've been looking into her background. Very strict religious family, apparently. Most of her childhood, she was going to church twice a day.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a...
Yeah, all right, so she could quote the Bible and so can our killer, but it's not exactly proof, is it?
Yeah, but you're convinced, aren't you? I convinced Frank Jefferson, the most sceptical man in Scotland Yard.
Well, put it this way, I've asked to see the Assistant Commissioner in the morning. I want the big guns with me on this one. And I've still got one or two loose ends to tie up.
Oh, you're never satisfied, are you?
Well... There were three of them in this bloke's room in Cambridge, right?
Mm.
One of them, the MP, caught the last train back to London. He's accounted for. But this BBC fella, Prentice...
Well, what about him?
Well, he traced the friends in Cambridge. He left the college around 12 o'clock, but he didn't get to his friends only 10 minutes away till nearly two. And what the hell was he doing?
Ah, trivial detail, Frank. All clear to chop up.
Yeah? Yeah, well, I suppose you're right.
So what's on the agenda?
Robin Oakley from Westminster, the piece from Washington, and Matthew Trinidad. Oh, and George says he's expecting to do a major piece, but he wants to leave for an hour or two. He's expecting a good development.
Breakthrough in the murder case. Good. Is George around anyway?
He's at Caroline. He thinks he needs cheering up.
Is that coffee?
It's so bloody unfair. Would I write a memo to the chairman saying let's abolish cricket coverage?
You realise what this means? Obviously, if you didn't write the memo, somebody forged it. Who are your main rivals for DG?
This is only gossip, obviously. It's really between me and Charles Prentice.
Who's he then?
By Media Development.
Sorry, there's a bit of a story breaking. Our people at Westminster have been on. Apparently they were meant to be attending a press briefing this morning given by Marcia Mallon.
So, what of it?
Well, she never showed up. Her driver says she wasn't at her home this morning when he went to collect her.
My God, she's done a bunk.
Basically, yeah. Marcia Mallon has vanished off the face of the earth.
But, Prime Minister, this is the white paper on devolved government for the regions.
Well, bang it, man! That's more like it. Right, off we go. A broom is drearily sweeping off the broken pieces of yesterday's life. Somewhere, a queen is weeping. Somewhere, a king has no wife. And the wind whispers, Marcia. Move over, Rover, and let the Prime Minister take over.
Oh.
In the Chair was written by Mark Taverner and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Hugh Laurie, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Richard Griffiths, Rebecca Front and Kenneth Cranham. And also featured Susie Brand, Peter Woodthorpe, Jeffrey Whitehead, Jonathan Keeble, Simon Greenall, Darren Boyd, Rachel Atkins, John Rowe and Harriet Katz. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. In the Chair was produced by Paul Sessinger.